Good evening. Welcome to the Soleri Report. Today is Thursday, May 2nd, 2019. This is Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this week. I've been in New York for several days. I'm staying right near the park, and I've been visiting with various subscribers, and we've been walking way too much back and forth in Central Park. It's been a lot of fun. It's spring, and it's unspeakably beautiful, as it was in Hickory Valley. Everything is blossoming. One of the reasons I'm here is I wanted to catch up with friends who are here from Europe to see Wagner's Ring. I was hoping that I could get one ticket instead of having to buy the series to get one ticket, but I didn't make it, and I didn't risk going and hoping I could buy one at the evening of the performance. So I haven't gotten to see Wagner's Ring. I'll be seeing Wagner and Sophia in July. But anyway, Central Park, wow, it's beautiful. Everything's blossoming. Welcome to spring. Our theme tonight is accessing the power of responsibility. The middle of the road is shrinking, and the reality is too many people, for my taste, although not very much the Soleri Report subscribers, but a lot of people around us are looking for scapegoats. Don't waste any time on people who do that or encourage that. There's a lot of the fear porn people doing that as well. The reality is the way you deal with this situation is by taking responsibility. That's how you get power over a situation. It doesn't matter whether it's your fault or not, just accept responsibility and build your power. And that's how we're going to move forward. You're seeing all sorts of signs that the unipolar model is fraying badly. Foreign Affairs, I finally got a chance to read the full volume of this, the magazine from the CFR. It's called Searching for Strategy. And they were basically multiple declarations of the end of the U.S. empire, you know, but still not dealing with reality. And so you, I don't know, it's very frustrating. A lot of people who, frankly, have been subsidized in the policy area by heavy government subsidy. I think I mentioned last week, but Mnuchin has been sued with respect to Sears asset stripping. And it makes you a little bit nervous that you have a Secretary of Treasury who's very knowledgeable about asset stripping when FASB 56 goes into place. I'm very concerned it will be used to do the ultimate asset strip of what you can't steal through the financial mechanism. There's a lot of real estate and land that you can't take through the normal mechanisms. And of course, asset stripping in FASB 56 could make it easier. We also see the announcement of a sudden death of Bart Shultman. He was the Commodities Future Trade Commissioner who was so admired by the gold bugs. He had worked very hard for transparency. When he left the Commodity Future Trade Commission, he went to work for a trading firm and then ended up running one of the RT programs. And that's part of what makes me nervous. It was announced that his death was sudden and unexpected and later described as supposedly pancreatic cancer sourced from a family member, all very not clear and out front. And I'm a little bit nervous by that announcement because what it shows is that there's an intolerance and a real effort to try and get lockdown on the truth and the spin. And it's all part of the push for war. You see, again, the sanctions have gone on. Venezuela, Iran, Cuba, literally trying to starve them by not allowing their oil to be sold in the open market. Remember, the reason Pearl Harbor happened was we cut off the Japanese supply of oil. So this is a kind of a reverse strategy. We're trying to cut off the ability to sell oil. We also see several articles, and I've posted several at the website, on the move by the Chinese into Hong Kong and really asserting control over Hong Kong. It's going to destroy the innovation, I think, of that wonderful city. It's too bad. We also see more and more in the healthcare mandates, with now Trump getting behind the idea of mandating measles vaccinations. You can see from the history that the MMR vaccination is more dangerous than getting measles. So, you know, the whole thing doesn't make sense. Again, as I said last week, the group in Williamsburg is, among other things, a group that's highly critical of the current leadership of Israeli, and I suspect there's dirty tricks involved. May 2nd is the 500th anniversary of Leonardo da Vinci's passing. As you know, we've made him the hero of the year for 2019. We usually wait till the end of the year, but it's going to be Leonardo for sure. We put up two posts on Da Vinci that also link to our other posts on Da Vinci. We'll be celebrating Da Vinci all year long. But in the second post, we put the books and exhibition recommendations. So if you want to plug in and enjoy Da Vinci this year, there are lots of ways to do it. Da Vinci's the ultimate example of the person who takes responsibility for the situation and in the process of trying to help Milan and Italy out of what was happening during the period that Da Vinci lived. He basically invented the modern world. Talk about a net energy plus guy. Anyway, very much an inspiration for the many advantages of taking responsibility for your situation. Money and markets. Let's look at returns so far this year. The U.S. dollar index doing fine, up 1.75% for the year. So in flat till recently, but up a little bit. Fixed income, the Fed met on Wednesday and announced it was going to keep its benchmark interest rate unchanged. If you look at where the yield curve is versus a year ago, so we're going from a 1 month to a 30-year at 2.44 to 2.94. So not inverted, but it's sort of halfway there compared to last year when we're at 1.69 on the short end and 3.14 on the long end. So the long end is about, 20 basis points lower. But on the short end, we are significantly higher, almost 75 basis points higher. So again, not an inverted yield curve, but sort of halfway there. But as you can see, that's not, given that they bumped it four times over the last year, I would say that's not, certainly not high interest rates. Trump had recommended or was nominating two people to fill up the Fed governorships, Moore and Herman Cain. Both have now pulled their nomination. the shriekometer was beating them up. It'll tell us a lot about who goes in. They weren't the normal kind of candidates, so they were a little bit, Moore's at Heritage and Cain is a basically a food restaurant entrepreneur, but they're not the typical conventional Fed governor. So anyway, it'll be very interesting to see, with a shriekometer pushing them out, who gets put in instead. Okay, the long Treasury ETF now up 2.86% for the year, the intermediate Treasury ETF up 2.21%, the bond aggregate up 2.8%, outperforming the intermediate but not the long. And then, who can believe it, junk at 9.17%. Again, I could never sleep if I had that position. But it tells you all that crappy oil paper is doing well. Equities, the S&P now up 17.27% for the year, literally flying and out of a sort of a down year last year. We're seeing all sorts of IPOs come to market, mostly the tech unicorns. It includes Uber and Lyft. A lot of analysis and objection to the model. We're seeing a prospectus from Uber saying they haven't made a profit and they probably never will. Now, that's partly risk language. But if you look at a comparison of their model versus companies 5 or 10 years ago, this really does look like bubble paper. Home builders now up 25.16%. European ETF up 14.31%, Germany up 12.86%, developed markets minus North America up 12.93%, large cap China up 13.31%, the small cap 17.42%, emerging markets 11.62%, commodities index up 8.16%. Again, as I said in the equity overview, I think it's too early to declare the commodity super cycle beginning again. Gold now down 70 basis points for the year, and silver in the doghouse down 5.3%, and oil flying at 48.23%, thanks to the U.S. keeping major supplies in Venezuela and Iran and other places off the market. So what's going on? The push for war is clearly on. We see this week the focus turned to war in Venezuela with the U.S. candidate trying to engineer a coup attempt that fails. We have Pompeo now threatening to engineer a U.S. invasion, implications going back and forth that Russia has stopped it. Basically, if you look at the game the U.S. is playing by keeping the oil off the markets from Venezuela, Iran, Syria, etc., the goal is long-term erosion strategy, just slowly starve a place to death with economic sanctions and keeping them from using global payment systems and trading in the market. It's the, whatever it is, it's the opposite of market economies. As one gold book said, there is no market, they're just interventions. A serious question I have is Operation Gladio financing the Mexican movements? I have been remiss in not doing a Salieri report on Operation Gladio, and I've been reading Paul Williams' book on Operation Gladio, which is really a combination of the Vatican CIA effort in Europe after World War II. It flowed out of that. But if you watch the immigration movements into both Europe and Mexico, it almost looks like it's a continuation of the Gladio strategy. And I will try and publish a book review on the book when I finish, and we'll see if we can't get a Gladio expert on. Part of the push for war, I think, is shutting down the group in Williamsburg with vaccine threats. My guess is the measles issues is probably low-grade biological warfare is what it looks like to me, but I would give that a high possibility. We also saw a series of different sort of events proving the existence of anti-Semitism. I'm a huge skeptic. One was the synagogue shooting out on the West Coast. Another was the New York Times published a cartoon that showed Trump as a blind man being led by a seeing-eye dog, which was in the shape of a dachshund with Netanyahu's face. Wouldn't surprise me if the guys who wanted to claim anti-Semitism had the Times publish it so that they could then apologize for it. The whole thing looks scripted. But I am reminded, one subscriber posted a comment from a Navy SEAL who said, you know, do you ever judge what Trump does? He says, problem is, I don't know what he knows. So why is Trump behaving this way? We don't know what he knows. But that's the only good thing I can say about the whole situation. I'm very much reminded of the W.C. Fields comedy routine when he talks about he always carries a flagon of whiskey in case of a snake bite and furthermore always carries a small snake. You're watching psychopaths use divide and conquer and all sorts of anti-hate laws and other things basically to give air cover to their activities, you know, and the real problem we have is psychopathy. If you haven't taken a look at the book Political Ponerology, it's really a political study of what happens when psychopaths get together and take over the political mechanism and how the general population can't really cope with it or deal with it until they're able to identify exactly what's happening. Because it's very hard for a healthy person to fathom the attitude or thinking of psychopathy. Speaking of psychopathy, there is a Terry Misson has a great article on a real estate development plan for Notre Dame that was put together in 2016, and it sure looks mighty suspicious that the fire is now teeing up a proposal to change the development process and the laws related to what now happens on the Ile de France. It's very, very, I hate to be redundant, it's very psychopathic. Facebook is now organizing a large cryptocurrency payment network at the same time they announced today they're throwing Alex Jones, Louis Farrakhan, and a whole group of others. In fact, people who've been remarkably good about criticizing the psychopaths, among other things. Anyway, they're throwing them off. It's very much a whiteout that we're seeing all across the internet. And I think in combination with Bart Shilton's death and some other things that are going on, not a very good sign. Apparently, they're also throwing off people who post any of these people on Facebook. And I'm not sure how it is you would know that is the new rule. My attitude is, What are you doing on Facebook? Get off of Facebook. PAYGO. I've mentioned PAYGO before. PAYGO is a rule that was instituted with credit reform in the 1990s that basically said you can't propose an expenditure through the appropriation process without identifying a funding source, which means you've either got to propose canceling some kind of spending to make room for your spending, or you've got to identify a new tax revenue. Pelosi, when she regained the speaker's chair, reinstituted PAYGO. Now, what does this mean? PAYGO means if PAYGO's in effect, all these crazy proposals you're seeing about things that cost $20, $30, $40, $50 trillion, you know, they have to go through PAYGO. Now, not necessarily when they're authorized, but if they're going to get funded through the appropriations process, they have to go through PAYGO, which means they're all completely, you know, happening in a world of, they're happening in the invention world in a room of illusion. The one thing that can go through is all the crazy cockamamie rules they create. If they don't require appropriations, those can go through, and that's where the danger is. Now, the question is, with FASB 56 permitting secret monies to be raised, war booty to be laundered into the federal government and spent out the back door, you know, does this mean basically you have to go through PAYGO or you have to go through one of the secrecy findings of FASB 56? My guess is FASB 56 opens up, you know, a lot of doors. We see the House in the U.S. back a climate bill that basically would require the Trump administration to go back into the Paris Agreement. Now, how that's going to work with PAYGO, that's a big question, because part of the Paris Agreement is basically putting together the, you know, another mother of all slush funds. But the fact that the House thinks they have the money to do that, but they don't have the money to bring relief on student loans or fund the pension funds, you know, that's a very ugly expression. Now, it may just be window dressing for the election, because everybody's got climate change fever. If you haven't, vis-a-vis climate change, if you haven't read my post, An Intelligent Conversation About the Environment, I would strongly recommend you do it. U.S. Steel has announced they are spending $1.2 billion to upgrade facilities in Pennsylvania. That's a big win for Trump, who really has made a tremendous effort to save U.S. Steel capacity. That's the right thing to do. The idea that we would let ourselves be dependent on Chinese steel is, you literally have to be nuts to do that. We still wait to hear what's coming of the China trade deals. No big announcements recently. Clearly, there's a push to get that done and make sure the markets are happy. U.S. tax season is over, and people are sort of recovering. It was particularly difficult given all the changes. And I just think the cost of complexity on the tax side is very high. Let's see if it gets easier next year. As the accounting profession sort of digests how to deal with that. European elections are coming up at the end of the month. It's something to watch. Also, the Commerzbank deal and Deutsche Bank has fallen apart. A real serious effort by both banks to see if they couldn't create a German juggernaut. Just too many difficulties, too many complexities. And so the deal has come apart, and that opens the door for the possibility that the German regulators will let another European bank come in and buy Commerzbank, which will be an interesting development in terms of really creating a European. If you can get the banks to really function and operate cross-border, maybe you can get the culture too. Interesting report from the Financial Times this week on the Milken Institute's annual gathering in Beverly Hills. There was big applause for Margaret Thatcher video. Apparently, it was the line where she said right after she got elected the first time, quote, capitalism has a moral basis. To be free, you have to be capitalist. I wouldn't say to be free, you have to be capitalist. I would say to be free, you have to have markets and honest pricing. But the whole thing reminds me of a line, if you look at who was there, including the Secretary of Treasury, it reminds me of a line from Turks and Caicos in the Worker trilogy. That's if you haven't seen the Worker trilogy or read my reviews of it, it's a must. it's a must to understand the modern world. And it's fabulous dramas written by David Hare, who's one of the great playwrights of our time. And it's published by the BBC. And it has Bill Nye as the lead protagonist. And he is absolutely fantastic. Anyway, so Bill Nye plays Johnny Walker. And a local cop is a guy named Jim Carroll. So Jim Carroll says, in a few days, they're sitting in Turks and Caicos on the beach. He says, in a few days, there's going to be this international colloquium, and this place will be crawling with rich and powerful people, the world's leading business people and politicians. And then Johnny Walker, the Bill Nye MI6 character, says, what? 4 days in the sun, and they conclude the global recovery depends on their making more money? So the problem with all this so-called capitalism is the people who are promoting it don't believe in it. They believe in U.S. fiscal and monetary policy that engineers crony capitalism combined with war and organized crime. And the reality is, now that we've been through the bailouts, now we've been through the missing money, we've been through a couple of stock market pumps and dumps, the general population knows, they get it. They don't buy their capitalist yakety yakety yak, because these folks don't believe in capitalism. They believe in monopoly and monopoly engineered with war and organized crime. And it's frightening, because what you realize is they're no longer looking in the mirror of what they're really doing. And this is the problem when you don't have honest government accounts, financial accounts, and you don't have place-based financial reporting. We start believing our own lies because we can't see our financial ecosystem clearly. It reminds me, and it started this sort of feeling of watching an elite that was fallen prey to their own lies. I first had that feeling in 1998. I went up to have lunch in New York with a very wealthy, sophisticated investor who was a personal friend who I really liked tremendously. When I first met him in 88, 89, we used to go off and have lunch and laugh about how rigged the system was. And I had lunch with him in 98. And suddenly I realized, oh my God, he's now starting to believe the Kool-Aid. He really doesn't understand. And it was scary to realize that a guy that smart, who was swinging around that much money, had no idea how the system was working and evolving. Anyway, so I've been in New York, as I said, for several days, and I've spent a lot of time walking through the park from West Side to East Side and back on 2 days. There are so many wealthy people here walking their dog or walking in the park, and they have baseball caps pulled over their face, and they're scared. You can see it in their demeanor. You can see it in their eyes. Now, they may be afraid, that their competitors are going to hit them with subpoenas. But they also may be scared that the average person is going to figure out who they are and how they really made their money. I've never seen this many rich people. When I lived in New York, you'd walk around and you had all these really famous, you'd see a billionaire walking down the street and famous celebrities who are clearly worth a lot of money. Not now. They're scared. So I can't believe they'd want to live in a world where you have to be scared to walk down the street. Anyway, I just think the rich right now are frighteningly lost and stupid. They're lost in the matrix, and it's making them stupid. It's what I've always said. People who win in a rigged game get stupid. But it's very scary, because if that's your leadership class, how in the world are they going to lead through the adaptation to the multipolar world? It's kind of like imagining Hillary Clinton having to compete on the merits, which is a really frightening thought. But the problem, it goes back to the red button problem. Everybody wants the story of I am good. And unfortunately, when the leadership class is that addicted to a phony story of why they're good, it's kind of scary. Anyway, it's important that you listen to the interview I do next week with Patrick Wood. I've already recorded it, so it's in the can. You really need to understand what technocracy is and how technocracy is evolving. It's a very, very important concept, because basically we're using software and AI and digital systems to replace both democratic process and markets through a process of basically, central control and micromanagement. And it's rolling out all over the world. It's rolling out in Asia. It's rolling out in the United States. And all this conversation about socialism versus capitalism is really sort of illusion and air cover for the rollout of technocracy. Just under the rubric of just when you think it can't get weirder, it gets weirder, we see articles this week from both Newsweek and Bloomberg on UFOs. You know, what is this about? Meantime, Dark Journalist did a great interview with Black Vault on the outing of the DeLong UFO operation. And I would point out the Newsweek article has a quote from Harry Reid about UFO arms race. You think, what is going on? I have spent a lot of time being criticized or ostracized because I bring up the topic of the black budget and UFOs. To me, to not bring it up is a completely material omission, given the sort of trillions of dollars disappearing down that hole. And obviously, you're trying to cope with a great deal of uncertainty. But for me, it's a material omission for any serious financial person to ignore that topic area. And so I'm used to being seriously ostracized and criticized because I bring it up. Now with Newsweek and Bloomberg bringing it up, it's going to be very interesting to see how this conversation integrates. I published this week at Solari a great letter from a subscriber. I got a call from a wonderful subscriber, very upset because a teenage member of their extended family had signed up for a transgender transition program. And what she realized was that the teenager's parents have no idea of the different dynamics of what could get a kid to want to do this in a way that was really a result of covert interference instead of their natural desire. And the covert tactics, in my opinion, that are being used on children right now, it's really used in a criminal way. Too many people just have no idea that they're being targeted with entrainment or they're being targeted with different things that cause their physical bodies or emotions to behave in ways that aren't, you know, wouldn't be happening if they were healthy. And I think a lot of parents and kids just can't fathom this. One of the things I spend a surprising amount of time doing is trying to persuade parents or grandparents that the kids are being targeted by pornography, and it doesn't take much to get a kid coming into a site where the actor is underage, and the next thing you know, that kid's got a felony rap and a control file. So, you know, it's what Curtis Mayfield said in his album, New World Order. It's a new world order, and brother, you're the prey. But unfortunately, we have very sophisticated both intelligence agencies, corporations, and private sting operations trying to entrap these kids, and it's we're going to help our children and the children we love really navigate a kind of environment that is this dangerous. In the U.S., we're watching the Shriekometer really spending a lot of airtime on the squabbling back and forth in the Congress about the Mueller report, the Democrats, the false narrative. Part of the problem is if you look at what is coming out on the sort of the rigged deal by the CIA, FBI to sort of intercede with the campaign in 2016 or the create a false narrative, there's a lot of pressure on the Democrats to keep all that from coming out, let alone get airtime. So it's a, you know, sort of it's a dirty, ugly game. And if you want coverage of it, it's you can waste a whole lot of time following the coverage, and you have to be careful not to waste that time. But the by far and away the best coverage I've ever found is at a website called The Last Refuge. I link to them a lot when I post anything on that. They've done a great job of documenting the false Russian frame, and they have a new one out. Now, what you can see is the Democrats are really trying hard, one group of Democrats, to find something they can use to impeach Trump. Here's the reality. If you're going to try and kill Trump before the election, you're going to have to go at him on something that's really going to work. If you look at Ward's new book on Kushner, called Kushner, Inc., my guess is that the way really to get Trump, if you wanted to, is not any of the ways they're trying now, not the hotels, the tax returns, but to go at the Qatari deal and Kushner's role in getting his family's building on 666 refinanced using the Qatari negotiations. You know, you pull in Tillerson and put him under oath and get him to testify what really went down. And then you go into the Kushner family's relationship, or the Kushner family's relationship with Netanyahu and HUD, and and then pull in Trump's relationships, or business relationships with Russian mafia. All of that could work to dig out something that would probably work coming into the elections. The problem is it's going to boomerang on everyone else. And that's why you so often, whether it's Monica Lewinsky or this Russian false frame, you know, you always try and get somebody on something that's faked up and trumped up, because everything that's real will boomerang back onto everybody else. And that's the, you know, things connect deeply in the swamp. So now what we see is just beating up on Barr and all sorts of theater about the Mueller report, because nobody wants to go deal with the real deal for the obvious swampy reasons. I wanted to point out before I finish the news stories, we have taken some of the time we spend on news trends and stories and moved it out of the normal economy and financial markets and political coverage, and much more of a focus on take action. To find the really great examples of things you can do to take action, much of which is state and local, and much of which is in your local area. But if you're going to take responsibility and really take action, there's lots of opportunity. But finding those stories and finding those links takes more time. So we're kind of re-engineering times to try and proactively get our news trends and stories editor, who's fantastic, digging out some great take action. So make sure to check out the take action section in news trends and stories. And for heaven's sakes, coming into the presidential election in 2020, if you want to reinvent your world, it's the action's going to be at the state and local government area. You know, do a time budget on how much time you're going to spend on political coverage or voting or elections, and then 80% or more do at the state and local level. Okay, the interview is part two with Dr. Farrell. They always are. This is a wonderful conversation. I get to Dr. Farrell's house, and I think I've totally aced it. We've done a great job. Our editor, Brad Edens, and I and some of the team have worked through all the trends. We've worked through all the stories. We've picked out our top stories. We've gone through the headlines, and I really think I have it nailed. And then I sit down, and Joseph and I have dinner, and we talk on Friday night, then we record on Saturday night. And by the time I've finished chewing through it with him, I'm like, wow, I see so many more dimensions. So for me, this is really an amazing experience in getting down to what is really important. And again, our goal with this is to make sure, if you never listen to any news but the quarterly assessments of news trends and stories, you'll be the smartest guy in the room. That's my goal, is to make you the smartest guy in the room with the least amount of your time. Now, remember, as you listen to part two, we have a web presentation for the first quarter wrap-up, and it's got all the trends, it's got the top stories, it's got a list of the headlines behind those top stories, we've got the Trump report card, we've got the top videos in the different sections. Really, as you're listening, I want you to take a look at the website, because I find scanning the headlines behind every story to be a very rich experience. In part two, we cover culture, we cover science and technology, we cover space, food, and health, and then go into take action, inspiration, and our good old friends, the unanswered questions, of which there are always many. We recorded the Trump report card at the end, so I'm having the audio team put those back in the first part. But remember, the report card's at the web presentation, so you can see it there. There are two stories in the second part two that I really want you to focus on. One is story number 13 is the weaponization of drug addicted populations. And I'm seeing in the economy more and more weaponization of different people and different segments of the population. One of the videos we cite in story number 13 is a great video that I've recommended to you before called Is Seattle Dying?, which is really about using drug-addicted populations to gentrify a city, you know, sort of move everybody out. I think it's very important that you understand that phenomenon, because it's definitely happening in Seattle. It's happening in Los Angeles. It's happening in San Francisco Bay Area. And I think it really is helpful to kind of see the game. So I want to make sure you see that one, particularly if you live on the West Coast or a place where it's happening. The second thing is story number 20 is Quantum Biology Blossoms. A lot of this is thanks to my access to Jason Bowden-Smith and the work he's doing on health and mitochondria. But Jason thinks that we're going through a revolution in quantum biology, understanding it and accessing the sort of different therapies we can use. If you haven't seen The Wave Genome with Ulrich Groniger, the second Future Science production she did last year, that will be very good background to helping you understand quantum biology. But I hope that we can do more over the next year or two to help me and you understand. I have a lot to learn. I feel like I'm just at the beginning, but there's some very positive, exciting, and lots of good news there. So we want to make sure we know about that and access it. Our hero this week is Andrew Tallon. Andrew Tallon was a Vassar professor who used lasers to scan and completely document the cathedral at Notre Dame. Before I went to Chartres last year, I watched a whole series of different documentaries on the great cathedrals of Europe, and one of them showed what he was doing and how he was doing it. He died right after he completed the project at a fairly young age, and it's a remarkable example of the extraordinary difference that one person, one human being can make. I wanted to also mention in Hero this week, one of the people who's been Hero several times at the Soleri Report is Alan Phillips, who is the leading attorney in the country writing and advising people on vaccine exemptions. Alan is in prison. I just made another donation, and I would encourage you to go to his website, and if you can make any kind of donation, no matter how small, every person and every dollar counts. Basically, the North Carolina Bar Association is demanding he give them a list of his clients, and it's absolutely, to me, it's absolutely immoral, unethical, illegal, and Alan, on principle, refuses to do so, and it's the right thing to do. It's the courageous thing to do, and it's essential that we support him in doing that. He has a child, and he's the lead responsible party caregiver. So I think anything we can do to help him with legal expenses and help sustain him through this period is very, very important. Let's go to the movies. As you know, if you've listened to Money and Markets for a while, I followed first in the Wall Street Journal as the Wall Street Journal reporter John Cario broke the story. And then in the book that he wrote, the story of Theranos, the Silicon Valley startup that was supposed to make blood testing much simpler and easier and doctorless. And there's a new documentary that's come out called The Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley, that describes the rise and fall of Theranos. Theranos went from a startup with a value of zero to a valuation that was said to be as much as $9 billion, and then back to zero. And the question, of course, is how could something have gotten this big, this bad, and this sort of nuts and out of control? I think there's a mystery here. If you look at the story as I followed it in the Wall Street Journal, you have a company that is having difficulty creating the kind of blood testing equipment that it needs, let alone on a reliable basis. And suddenly, the lead scientist behind Holmes, the founder, suddenly, supposedly, they said, commit suicide, at which point the people who understand life sciences and biotech are thrown off the board. And the board is basically a group of people from the deep state, from George Shultz, Henry Kissinger, one of the Bechtels. And they go from spending a lot of money on trying to invent the fundamental equipment to hiring fancy attorneys who terrorize everybody, keep everything confidential, and instead of sort of inventing what they've promised to deliver, spend lots of money protecting themselves from the fact that they have not yet invented it. So the story doesn't hang together, and the question is, what were these deep staters thinking? What were they really up to? You almost wonder why you have a group of deep staters who are hoping to get blood samples from everybody in America without their doctor being around. You know, big question mark. The reality is, if you look at the more this story goes, the more everything is blamed on the young CEO, Elizabeth Holmes, the founder, and the board is totally skating. And that includes SEC investigations and indictments now against Holmes and, I believe, her number two. So there's a mystery here, and I don't know what it is yet, but when you watch, it's fascinating to watch, because how anything could have gotten this big and this bad on this much empty, you know, you're just shaking your head, and it makes you wonder about the criticisms of Uber and some of the other IPOs, sort of tech unicorn IPOs. How could a company write a prospectus that says it's never made a profit and is very likely never to make a profit? It's like, okay, who wants that data? Nicholas Negroponte, who was head of the Media Lab when he said this, once said, in a digital age, data about money is worth more than money. And you almost wonder if Uber and Lyft and these other companies aren't essentially being created as train tracks to control where people can go and where they can travel. I mean, you go to driverless cars and you think you're talking about tyranny now. Where do you see that? Ask Catherine. We've had a lot of good suggestions, and I have put a lot of them down in the appendix instead of in the notes. You can see the notes up at our commentary for the Salieri Report. Somebody sent me a interesting video of Tulsi Gabbard. I suspect it may have entrainment, so just beware when you watch this stuff. Remember, the goal of, and I like Tulsi Gabbard. I think she's a very capable, competent person. I don't agree with her on everything, but I think she's one of the leading lights on the Democratic side and is trying to lead a very sincere and intelligent conversation. Just remember, you know, even with someone who's a good guy like Gabbard, you can see the system use entrainment because they're trying to suck you back in into investing in the process, believing in the process. They want to have candidates who bring you in and get you involved, and then they flip them as they did during 2016. You know, Sanders gets you involved and then you flip it and you're stuck with Clinton, but now everybody's vested in the national process. Sit down, do a time budget. How much money and time are you going to spend on politics during 2020? 80% or more should go to your state and local races. Get involved. Please learn about your local financial ecosystem. That's where the war will be won and lost in 3,100 counties in the United States. You know, flip their financial ecosystem. The situation in Europe on the ground, in my opinion, is much better. But the U.S., unless you can shift the money in every county 3,100 times, ain't going to be any change. Catherine, if you get a chance, get in touch with Harrison Schmitt, Apollo 17 moonwalker and former U.S. Senator. He chaired the HUD committee in Congress. In my view, you both have a great deal in common, and he would make an excellent guest. I will definitely check him out. We definitely need more people who can help us understand what is going on in space, because a lot's going on in space. It's moving fast. It's important. And, you know, of course, I want to know, is the suborbital platform the new offshore haven? Catherine, I'm curious about what your thoughts are about what's going on Midianite-wise within pharma circles. First, Scott Gottlieb's sudden resignation. I'm no fan of his, given his threats to have the feds take away vaccine exemptions. But then why would he resign if he was enforcing the party line? Also, Daniel Best, the health official overseeing the Trump administration's efforts to lower drug costs, appears to have been suicided on November 1st. Yes, we covered that a lot. And more links in your message. And then there was the recent gas explosion in Durham, North Carolina, which happened to take place next door to the Ingram collection of Porsches owned by Robert Ingram, a general partner in a venture capital firm who previously served as the CEO of a major pharmaceutical company. That quote is rather nondescript. Ingram was CEO of GlaxoSmithKline when it merged and became GlaxoSmithKline, GSK. In 2017, he was appointed chair of the board of BioCryst Pharmaceuticals. And then there's some more links. Just curious what might be going on in the pharma world, all at the same time the vaccine mandates are escalating. If you know, pharma's been flying, and as you see it turn down relative to the S&P, you see more of these promotions. But I have never believed that ultimately the vaccine mandates are about pharma profits. I think there's a much deeper agenda going on. It certainly looks like the Midianite thing is happening. And I would say that this is a very, very dangerous time. And so if you're working in pharma, you certainly need to be aware of the dangers of all sorts of covert agendas. You need to be very careful and appreciate the nature of some of the covert risks that may be operating. Hi, Catherine. Here's a more proof version of the alternate Vitruvian Man theory report, and that's on Da Vinci's Vitruvian Man. So I put that all in the notes, and I thank you. I haven't had time to read it carefully, but I will. And again, I said there are more suggestions in the appendix. Coming up next week, we have Technocracy with Patrick Wood. It's so important to me that you spend some time to understand technocracy. This is a phenomena. When I first read Patrick Wood's book on technocracy, he's got two of them now. I put it in Best Books for 2018. It's in Best Books for 2019. You really want to understand this, because if you are operating in any of the G7 world in Europe and America, technocracy is driving you crazy. If you're in Asia, if you're in China, technocracy is driving you crazy. If you're in Hong Kong, you're trying to get away from it moving in. So please take some time to listen to this interview and even get one or both of his books and read it. I assure you, it will be very, very helpful. The following week, a discussion with Paul Glover, founder of the Ithaca Hours Community Currency. We'll be talking about community currencies. I'm going to be writing more in wrap-ups this year on the currency question, which is coming to a head. And we had one local official write and ask for me to do more on community currency. So I thought I would start with a great interview with Paul Glover, which I had the opportunity to do. He's in Pennsylvania when I was up there for Christmas. Then the following week, I'm going to do a discussion called Deep State Tactics 101. When I wrote the personal history for the 2018 annual wrap-up, I wanted to add a section on tactics, and I realized, whoa, it's too long already. If you go into the different tactics that they've used to suppress the missing money story, you know, that's got to be a whole different presentation. So I'm going to do a recording and go through all the different tactics I've experienced over the decades that they use to suppress stories like the missing money story. But I think my goal is to make sure that you understand the tactics used in a way that you can see them as they operate in the world around you and other situations. Then following that, we have the Saker back. We have a lot to talk about in the push for war for the emerging multipolar world discussion. And then my theme for the first quarter wrap-up I'll do in June on the application of ESG. And it's very important you understand the technocracy discussion. That's very valuable background for that theme, which is why I wanted to do it first. I've just finished the hard copy proof for the annual wrap-up, so that should go to the printer. Because of the extraordinary length of getting all the missing money material into one place, we're going to do something we've never done before, and that is publish a wrap-up in two books. We're going to have two volumes. And the first part will be just on the missing money, and then the second part will be on everything else. So if you have a premium subscription, we will mail you the first book first, and then the second book will come off the printer after the first book. So you'll get two books this time. If you want to get that book, you can either switch to a premium subscription, or if you're a subscriber, you can also go to the store and just buy it separately. You'll be able to buy the first volume separate from the second volume. Anyway, so until next week, Technocracy with Patrick Wood. Please remember, don't worry about whether there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck. Thank you.